This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 a.m. on Friday, May the 13th. We're going to recap how global markets closed yesterday.
In U.S., Dow down 0.3%, S&P 500 down 0.1%, Nasdaq up 0.1%. Asian market-wise, Nikkei down 1.8%, Hang Seng down 2.2%, Shanghai Composite down 0.1%, STI down 1.9%, FBM KLCI down 1.1%. A lot of downs there.
A pretty red day overall. Joining us on the line now for some thoughts on what's moving markets, we have Carlos Casanova, Senior Economist at UBP in Hong Kong. Carlos, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Can I get your quick thoughts on inflation? We saw the pace of the U.S. producer price index rise slower in April. Do you see peak inflation around the corner?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show. So inflation is definitely the main driver of market sentiment this week, not only in the U.S. We also saw much higher than expected inflation in many Asian markets. In our opinion, we are probably seeing peak inflation in the sense that we don't expect it to overshoot significantly from here. However, given that there's been some unprecedented shocks to commodities with the conflict in Ukraine, and also there continue to be pressures on supply chains due to China's zero COVID policy, we expect that this persistently high inflation, around 8.5 to 9%, will unfortunately continue in the coming months, stoking fears of, you know, an overreactive Fed and recession in the U.S. Before it starts to stabilize in 2023. But we only think that they will come down and normalize again in the second half of next year. So we do still have quite a few months of higher inflation ahead of us, but we don't expect it to be significantly higher than that range, 8 to 9%.
Yeah, Carlos, Jay Powell was in the news yesterday and he did reaffirm the fact that they'll raise rates by 50 bips for at least the next two meetings. Traders and of course forecasts in the Bloomberg terminal reckon that the Fed funds rate will peak at a little under 3% next year and start declining in 2024. What do you think of that kind of forecast, which is, you know, obviously moving all over the place?
There's a lot of changes to the forecast. So we also expect around that level. Originally, our view was two consecutive 50 basis point rate hikes, followed by 25 basis point rate hikes in every subsequent meeting this year. There was a lot of controversy surrounding the last FOMC meeting because it was broadly interpreted as being dovish. In fact, for me, I think it was slightly more hawkish than expected because they mentioned 350 basis point rate hikes. So I think the jury is still out. We could see 350 basis point rate hikes, which means that we would be reaching, you know, that 3% level by the end of the year. But it is also possible that the debate surrounding the potential recession in the US or potential slowdown in the US in 2023 could take precedent over that debate around inflation. Of course, we are continuing to see inflation increasing on a month-to-month basis every month. But as that sort of starts to flatten out, maybe this debate on the economy takes precedent and we might see a slightly more reasonable Fed. But for the time being, no one knows if the next meeting will be 50 or potentially, maybe the whole issue with a 75 basis point rate hike comes back again. So do expect to see that consensus continue to evolve in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Carlos, just to mention again, I mean, the Fed funds rates, according to the Bloomberg, expected a peak at a little under 3% next year and start going down in 2024. That means the Fed will, you know, obviously hike until around about 3%. But if they start dropping it in 2024, that means with inflation still around 4%, that'll be the first time that the Fed reverses course with a negative 1% real rate. I mean, that's the expectations at this point in time. What are your views on that kind of forecast?
I'm not sure of course, the negative interest rate would be still quite negative due to inflation. But remember, it's not the first time that the Fed has to change course due to issues with the global economy. The Yellen notoriously put a pause on rate hikes due to issues with China in 2016. And of course, right before the Asia financial crisis in the late 90s, the Fed also supposedly embarked in a long period of tapering, and they basically had to reverse after just one rate hike, one 25 basis point rate hike. So I think that they are going to be pragmatic in terms of balancing the different economic factors and looking at the data. But the data right now shows an overheating U.S. economy and rising inflation. So, you know, with credibility at stake, the only thing that the Fed can do for the time being is to continue to push a normalization.
All right, let's move our attention to Asia. So because Asian equities continue to be sold off as interest rates increase around the world, so where is the outflow from stocks in this region going to? Is it moving into fixed income?
No, so we are seeing a lot of interest in US dollar. Dollar remains king with everything that's happening. In particular, we expect to see some upside on the US dollar, and investors are keen on getting exposure. Fixed income in the context of, you know, having a more balanced allocation in your portfolio. So it's not an equity market anymore. We are seeing more interest in fixed income. But within the fixed income spectrum, I would say that the interest is in moving up the credit ladder. So more quality, higher rating credit without sacrificing too much yield. Of course, if we continue to see, you know, this current pace of interest rate hikes and the US 10-year yield moving, you know, above perhaps 3.2%. We expect it to remain between 3 to 3.5%. If it heads towards the upper end of that range, I think investors will be interested in increasing duration once again. And the last thing is, we are seeing a lot of people holding onto cash. Inflation's high. That is not a sustainable position, but it is a defensive position in case there's a correction, further correction in markets. And it also means that you're better positioned to bounce back and invest in the things that will recover once there's more visibility in the horizon.
And you mentioned King Dollar, Carlos. The Hong Kong Monetary Authority intervened to defend their currency for the first time since 2019 this week. With the US dollar surge looking unstoppable, what impacts will a weakening Hong Kong dollar have on an already weak economy?
Right. So first of all, we do expect the Hong Kong dollar to remain weak in the coming months, as there's going to be a widening between the base rate and the Hong Kong interbank rate. When that happens, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority needs to utilize its FX reserves to buy up Hong Kong dollar to ensure that it remains at that weak end of its currency band. That's the whole mandate of the Hong Kong MA. That means that there'll be fewer FX reserves, so you'll see a deterioration in the fundamentals, which is likely going to drag on investor sentiment. And of course, with that comes further outflows. So that will be the first thing. Second is imported inflation will be higher. So the commodity prices are expected to remain quite stubbornly high this year. If you have a currency that is continuously at the weak end of the band, that means that in relative terms, your imports are going to be more expensive, and your consumption is going to go down because things increase in price. So that would be the second impact. And third is, you know, if this situation becomes unsustainable over time, and then they have to allow, of course, Hong Kong has to follow the Fed, but the interbank rate doesn't have to follow the same trajectory. If, however, at some point it becomes too difficult for Hong Kong to smooth out the impact of Fed tapering on the Hong Kong economy, then they'll have to allow the Hong Kong interbank rate to increase significantly, which means the mortgage costs go up, which means housing prices could potentially correct. But this is something further down the line, which we might only see into 2023.
Yeah, Carlos, switching to China now, and of course we see the jobless rate climb to 5.8% in March, highest level in at least 2 years. You know, we know that the Chinese government is intent on pursuing its zero COVID policy. What's your view on employment in China in the coming few months?
So for that surveyed unemployment rate, the current consensus in the market, if you look at some of the surveys conducted by the data providers, is that it will increase slightly to 6.0% from 5.8%. I think given the magnitude of the situation, there are some upside risks to that consensus view. I think even up to 6.5 for surveyed unemployment would not be a surprise in this environment. I think they are going to focus very much on employment is one of the key targets for 2022. They have a jobless fund, which is charged with managing the situation. And they did come out with a statement this week saying that they have enough funds to cope with large-scale unemployment, which suggests to me that those upside risks, is something that they are kind of aware of and monitoring. So do expect a little bit more than 6% this month. And of course, the issue is not only that 6.5% number, which is not that bad in the bigger context. The issue is youth unemployment, and employment for those under 25 is significantly higher at around 20%. And that is a very important demographic, I think, for any country going forward. So they will have to do a lot more. And this is something that is, can't be resolved with subsidies or the jobless fund in order to ensure that there is enough labor creation in the future to absorb the young workforce. Otherwise, it could lead to more social instability.
Carlos, thanks as always for speaking with us this morning. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP, giving us his thoughts on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, of course, it's all about the three main headwinds, right? Obviously, the war in Ukraine, the commodity price increase, and of course, the supply chain disruptions. And of course, China, the last one. Lots of things are hitting financial markets so far this year. It's been a bit of a nightmare, actually, so far.
Yes, and in the US, something interesting in terms of Robinhood, because the CEO of crypto exchange FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, has taken a 7.6% stake in Robinhood, and shares of the company jumped 36% at one point in extended trading before pulling back again. And apparently, according to the filing with the SEC, the Emergent Fidelity Technologies, which is the entity that took a stake, is worth $648 million. The stake in Robinhood is that $648 million.
And Sam Bankman-Fried is the founder of FTX, one of the largest crypto exchanges in the world that has become a rival to Coinbase and Binance. So that's why this is really making waves, and a lot of investors, I suppose, are feeling good about this stake. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.